I'm Gab. He's done. Hey. No Jules today, but don't worry, Jules fans. He's going to be back. Blue skies over West London. Done. People said, oh, the season's over. What are you going to talk about? Oh, there's so much to talk about. Yeah. Jude Bellingham's deal to Real Madrid is done. The Nations League. Croatia against Holland. It was a tremendous game last night. Less so, of course, if you're Dutch. But what a joy it was to see Luka Modric out there. Oh. Great fans. Great atmosphere as well. But there's an even bigger story, and that's where we're going to start. Kylian Mbappe. So let me give a bit of a rewind, like you do on soap operas, where they tell you kind of what happened previously. Yeah. 2021, he had a year left on his contract with Paris Saint-Germain, and he basically wasn't extending his contract. And so Paris Saint-Germain, so other clubs circling around them, so they figured, well, Paris Saint-Germain won't want to leave him on a free transfer the following summer. So Real Madrid came in with a massive offer late in the transfer
window. Loads of work in.
A ton of work. Yeah, they spent a lot on this, talking with his family, with his mom, with his lawyer. 180 million is the figure I understand. Some have it even higher. Paris Saint-Germain say no. And so we all thought, okay, Mbappe must be annoyed, and he's going to leave the next summer in a free transfer. I even said at the time, this is great for Real Madrid because rather than giving you 180 million to, you can go spend somebody else, right? We all thought it was heading that way. And then, bombshell, May 2022, what does he do? He announces that he's extending his deal with Paris Saint-Germain. And the Paris Saint-Germain put out pictures of him holding the shirt that said 2025. Well, it wasn't really 2025. As we told you at the time, it was a 2+1 deal. It was a 2-year commitment. Yep. And then he had the option for a third year.
Yep.
At that point, he had the leverage once again. Yeah. A year has passed, which means he's got a year left on his contract, and he has let it be known that he's not going to take up that option year, which means he's going to become a free agent in June of 2024, which means from Paris Saint-Germain's perspective, you either lose him for nothing.
Can't happen.
Or you sell him now, and you think can't happen.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine PSG will allow, even though he's under contract, Kylian Mbappe to make all this noise, stay for one more year, then go on a free transfer. I can't imagine that, Gab. The money that would be involved, I mean, I don't know what the figures might be. £100 million, £150 million if they sign him now.
Well, if it was 180 2 years ago, it's not like he's gotten worse.
No, exactly. But I mean, because of the time left on the contract, obviously the closer it runs down to a free.
But it was a year left 2 years ago as well, of course.
True. But I think if you're Kylian Mbappe now, you're saying the right things. I think you've got all the aces. I think even Real Madrid can sit back now and go, well, you know, do we need to chase you again? They've chased him since he was 11. You know, they chase this guy forever. It feels like inevitable that he will sign for Real Madrid. That has to be the next move for him, to be that Galactico main name, even though Bellingham's in there and Vinny Jr.'s in there and all the young players that they've got. He goes in there, he changes the dynamics, I think, of everyone in world football going, wow, Real Madrid are back. But how do they do at Real Madrid? Do they stay patient? I think they have to.
Well, they stayed patient 2 years ago, right? And then what happened? He ended up extending his deal.
So he burned them. But even though he did burn them and he would have caused a lot of drama and a lot of stress, Mbappe not going to Real Madrid because of the work, as you said, that they put in to sign him, I still think when he comes back up for sale again, I think there would no way Real Madrid would turn him down. You can't. Best player in the world.
So you think Paris Saint-Germain now are saying, all right, we're not going to try to extend him like we did last time?
Unless money is literally no object and they say, we don't care if we lose you on the free, but you are staying, which makes no business sense to me. But
they've saved themselves a ton of money, obviously, because Lionel Messi is no longer there.
But everything there seems to be falling apart, doesn't it? Messi going, Neymar's probably going to be on his way. Mbappe inevitably going to go to Real Madrid. It feels like PSG. No wonder Jules is off. It feels like PSG is just going to collapse.
You say everything's going. At the same time, though, you know, this is the team that had the highest wage bill in Europe. There is a pathway for Paris Saint-Germain to rebuild with young French talent. I think that's what we're going to hear more and more of. From Real Madrid's perspective, what would concern me is, you can get a commitment from him, but presumably they had a verbal commitment from him and his people before. Mm. At some point, you want to get this locked up because he may be a Real Madrid fan and may say, I want to play for Real Madrid one day. Mm. There's other big clubs in Europe.
But Benzema started this, hasn't he? No one saw Benzema leaving a couple of weeks ago. So Benzema going to Saudi has more or less made Real Madrid think about Kylian Mbappe again.
All right, Dan, let's go back to this point. You said Paris Saint-Germain have to sell him if he's not going to extend.
In my naive business world, they can't afford to lose him on a free. That's very loose. They can't afford to lose him on a free.
Well,
but it doesn't make any sense to lose him on a free.
Well, that was exactly the situation they were in 2 years ago, right? When they turned down that 180 million from Real Madrid at the end of the transfer window.
Yeah.
I can only assume that they were super confident that he was going to extend and whatever else. But I think it's worth reminding everybody that the player controls the situation.
Definitely.
The days when, and there was a time when I think players could be bought and sold like cattle and they didn't control their future.
Yeah.
Right? Mbappe has to say yes and sign a new deal to any team they move to. So it's not like Paris Saint-Germain can sell him somewhere he doesn't want to go. So Paris Saint-Germain can reach a deal with Real Madrid.
Yeah. And the player can say, no, I'm not going.
Well, if there's a transfer fee involved, yeah. I mean, you were a player, right?
Yeah, of course.
If they said to you, like...
But the dynamics were different because the players have got all the cards and the aces these days because they've got millions and millions of pounds in the bank where they can turn around and go, well, I'm not going. Even though you've agreed a fee, Real Madrid have agreed a fee with Paris Saint-Germain, I'm not going. I'm going to make sure I go on a free. Whereas so in my day, you didn't have the money in the bank, so you didn't really have any leverage.
But here's the thing. Let's say Real Madrid offer 200 million or whatever, right? Now, right?
Okay.
And let's say it's then 50 million a year for Mbappe.
Yeah.
If Mbappe waits a year at Paris Saint-Germain,
yeah.
Real Madrid don't have to pay the 200 million.
Nope.
And a big chunk of that 200 million can go to Mbappe.
Exactly.
That's the beauty of free agency.
Of course.
So he controls all the cards here. He has all the leverage in the situation.
Where it's not great for Paris Saint-Germain is if, say, Kylian turns around and says, well, whatever happens between Real Madrid and Paris Saint-Germain in terms of a fee, I am not going. So therefore, does his quality of appearance deteriorate? Does he...
What do you mean by quality of appearance?
Well, let's...
Like how handsome he is?
No. Let's just say you get to, I don't know, Feb, March, and it's tough for PSG. And does Kylian Mbappe know he's going on a free transfer in 3 months' time, risk going in for that tackle where you could get an ACL, you could get a really bad injury, you could get a shocker. So that's what comes into my brain because that's how we worked as players, because we didn't have the money. So you're never quite sure on the level of performance from any individual once they're running their contract down.
Right.
That's what PSG would be afraid of if he down tools.
I love the concept of Todd saying, like, Premier League players 20 years ago didn't have the money, and then you know there's an older guy 20 years before that saying, like, well, we didn't have the money, and then, you know, like in Stevie Nichols' day, well, we really didn't have the money.
But we've not got 50 or 100 million pound in the bank to turn around and go, yeah, I'm staying where I want, I'm not going.
I would assume the way with this would have to work is January 1st Mbappe can sign with anybody.
Yeah,
you would have to work something out. I mean, if I were Mbappe, you couldn't leave it. You couldn't play the game you played last time where he leaves it till May.
Yeah.
Unless you were actively trying to tease out. If I'm Real Madrid...
I don't think he goes on a free, Gab. I can't see it. I can't see PSG saying to Kylian Mbappe through the last season, because it's going to be a circus. It's going to be a drama. He's going to be in the news every single day. He's going to be front, back, centre of newspapers every single day. Kylian's got 10 months left. Kylian's got 9. Kylian's got 8. All of a sudden, he's got weeks.
But that's why January 1st, if he signs a contract, it knocks it on the head.
I don't think it gets that far. Do you?
Well, my difficulty is...
I mean, if you're Real Madrid, you're in an amazing position. You can say, we're just going to... By the way, you do what you want, Kylian. We've chased you for a long time. We're just going to sit back. We're just going to sit here, and you can come to us, whether we pay PSG £100 million. Because, do you know what? We're not bothered, because we'll wait a year, and we'll take you on a free transfer.
If he still wants to come. And that's why, if I were Real Madrid, I would not want to get sucked into this. I would not negotiate with Paris Saint-Germain.
No.
I would say, Kylian, this is the contract we have for you, and you'll make a ton of money. You need to sign it January 1st.
Yeah.
If you don't sign it January 1st, that contract's off the table. And then we can revisit this if you actually do reach free agency in the summer.
Mm.
But we're not going to think about you beyond that. We're certainly not going to go and give money to... Remember, the relationship as well between Real Madrid and Paris Saint-Germain is terrible right now for many different reasons. It's certainly an interesting one. Do you see anybody else coming in?
Not really. I mean, I know he's got a soft spot for Liverpool. I think traditionally, I think if they were super wealthy, they could make moves, but I don't think so. You've just seen them pull out the move of Jude Bellingham because they can't afford it. How are they going to afford Kylian Mbappe? No. Man City, yes. To play under Pep would be a big attraction. Seeing them,
Riyad Mahrez could be leaving.
Well, there'd be quite a few, yeah.
Did you see that? I was curious about that.
I don't see any other move than Real Madrid. As a Real Madrid fan, he was, or probably still is, pictures of all the greats on his walls, wanting to wear that shirt where it would take them to a whole new level. PSG's PSG, an amazing football club. Different, totally different. They've tried to go the Galactica route in a hurry, and it's not worked. The only club I can envision him playing for is Real Madrid. It's the only one. The problem is, he doesn't want to play through the middle, because Benzema's changed everything.
Well, we'll get to that issue, but I wanted to, on a more simple footballing aspect, right, what we've seen from Kylian Mbappe at Paris Saint-Germain, but frankly also with France as well at the World Cup, is he's not really part of the collective. The way he played, I mean, we've seen him early in the career, he was pressing, he was working, you know, he was very much part of the unit.
Yeah.
At the World Cup. And look, it's not a criticism, obviously. No. You know, he scored some goals in the final and it worked out. He was kind of the guy who was just hanging out up the pitch.
Moments,
waiting for the ball, scoring, and whatever. You know, he's kind of doing it 22, what Messi does at 35, right?
Yeah.
Does that fit a Pep system? Would it be the kind of thing where Pep would have to say, or even a Klopp system? Mm. So, I guess what I'm driving at, in these situations where you have managers who have systems and whatever else, I mean, certainly in Manchester City, everybody's required to go and do X amount of defensive work.
See, if you're playing fantasy football, he fits anyone, doesn't he? But they've done 100 million on Jack Grealish, who's been really good this season. And I know
he was another soloist.
Yeah,
He was a solo player, and now he's in an orchestra, if you want to use that layman analogy.
I'm not comparing the two players,
right?
But that's where you start playing fantasy football, and you go, well, Kylian Mbappe, if you sold Jack Grealish, yeah, he plays off the left-hand side. Of course he's a better player, even Jack Grealish. Even in his state in the last 3 days, he'll hold his hands up and say, yeah, I think Mbappe's a
better. Forget who's better.
But
I'm asking you,
comes into
can
play,
he fit into...
Anyone.
Well, I guess this is what I'm driving
anyone.
At. If you're Pep or Klopp, and you say, I've got a balanced team here, I've got people who are required to do things
he's
off the
best
world.
In the world.
No, that's fine. That's fine.
So he fits anywhere, and you make him fit anywhere. Don't you? I think so. I think when you've got a generational talent
you would,
like a bad
but what player. I'm saying is, would Pep or Klopp,
definitely,
would they have that same attitude? Would Mbappe embrace it? Has City reached the point where Mbappe looks at people like Kevin De Bruyne or whatever and say, like, these guys are super talented number 10s, or even Haaland when he came over, right? Yeah. And he sees their work rate off the ball.
Yeah.
And he says, you know, to
you
play for
you don't really
Pep-
think like that as a player, though, Gab. You think, what can I add to this team? Right. You don't look at a Man City and go, well, the work rate off the ball and the manager does this and the players press. And these are things that on the outside can be a little bit superficial, where as a player, Mbappe's thinking, well, I can walk into Liverpool's team and the fans are going to adore me because I'm the best in the world.
So you don't think he thinks about the manager and what the manager
No,
wants
no, you think
players.
About the manager, of course. I mean, look at João Felix playing for Simeone. That was one of the worst moves I think I've ever seen in terms of relationship from a manager to an exciting player. That just never, ever fitted, in my opinion. So, of course, when the manager's selling you it, of course you need to listen and find out what the grand plan is. But I think any manager in world football, if Mbappe's sitting in front of them, would take him in a heartbeat. They wouldn't even think twice. No one would think twice about taking him.
Right, but would Mbappe then think about it?
Well, of course it's on him.
No, because we've seen this season, right? Messi, Neymar, Mbappe together.
Yeah.
You have three people who contribute nothing defensively, and that totally turned against Paris Saint-Germain.
But that was never going to work, the three of them. You can carry one. I think you can. I think at any level, even at Champions League level, even at international level, I think you can afford, with the right players behind an Mbappe or a Messi or a Neymar, you can always carry one. You can't carry three in the modern day. In the modern day game, it's impossible to carry three. That's why I never thought PSG would ever win the Champions League.
Are you okay with Mbappe at 22 wanting to be carried?
If this is
how we're reading it, right? If we are reading it. And look, when he was a couple years ago, he did work much harder off the ball, right? But is it okay with you as a professional saying, like, if these other people who are, you know, I don't want to say they're better or worse, but Haaland is definitely in Mbappe's ballpark, right? Yeah. Nobody's going to dispute right?
Yeah.
Haaland goes and busses backside. Riyad Mahrez lesser player, whatever, but also a skilled player, goes and busts his backside. Jack Grealish at Villa, he certainly was.
You can name everyone in the world, everyone's a step below Kylian Mbappe.
So they don't. So he doesn't have to go and work off the ball.
No. You'd want him to do You'd want your players as a manager and as a teammate to do as much as you can. But at the same time, if you're playing with Kylian Mbappe, you'd say to him, "Don't go past the halfway line. We'll do all that for you."
You think Pep would say that?
In a roundabout way, yeah.
Okay.
In a roundabout way. I think he'd done that when he had his...
I find this really interesting because...
Do you ever remember Messi closing down and walking back and being on the edge of his 18-yard box?
When he was
at
Barcelona working for Pep?
For Pep?
Yeah, 100%.
But all of the time? Because you want him to be fresh and there's a player playing behind him. You're like, Kylian, I'll do this for you.
Yeah, no, that's not how...
You go that way.
You can go back... And like younger listeners, people who've only watched Messi, but it's one of the benefits. One of the few benefits of being old is... I think Pep left Barcelona in 2013 or 2012. So we're talking many, many years ago, right? Yeah. Young Messi in that team. Yeah. Now, this was also a team that had 70% possession. And when they'd lose the ball, they'd all go and run.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The 6-second rule, all that stuff.
He worked a ton.
Yeah, yeah.
He worked an absolute ton off the ball.
I'm not saying he didn't. But what I'm saying
But that's what I'm saying is you would... And I said, I mean, I think this is the conundrum, right? Would you expect Mbappe to do in... a City team or even a Liverpool team, because I can refer to Mo Salah. Yeah. Mo Salah, before he went, when he was at Roma, he was a phenomenal player.
Yeah.
He did not provide the work rate off the ball that he provided when he came to Liverpool.
Incredible.
All right. That was a change.
I think he does that a little bit too much.
All right. That's another issue. But the question is,
he's unselfish.
Would a Klopp or a Pep demand this of Mbappe? Would Mbappe say, you know what? I can do this. I'm such a phenomenal athlete. I'm not playing with a bunch of mopes at the back.
If that's the conversation, then that's what you want to hear as a manager.
Oh, 100%. And that's what I find interesting about it. I think Mbappe might feel like, look, this team's so good that, you know, I will work. I will work for my teammates because I know that they'll give me the ball back and I'll still score a ton of goals and I'll set up Haaland and whatever. So,
can you imagine the conversation very quickly between Andy Robertson, right, or Akanji, if they've got Kylian Mbappe? The two of them would turn around and go, don't you be coming back here. I will do all your work for you.
I don't think so. This is where we fundamentally disagree.
Because I think you look at it like...
With a different manager, yeah. Not with the managers that they have.
I still think for a generational talent, right?
It's not like he's the only generational talent in the world. I mean, there's others. It's a good conversation.
Vinny Jr. is a good example. Vinny Jr. does a certain amount of work, but you never see him come all the way back.
But Vinny Jr. is not working with Pep or Klopp. He's working with Ancelotti. With that kind of manager... who's much more of a man manager, less of a system guy, much more of a pragmatist.
I think you're underestimating the conversation between a Pep, a Klopp, the players that are playing for Liverpool or Man City. I think you're underestimating how much players would give someone like Mbappe a little bit more freedom.
I think the players might. But look at Manchester City. The players don't matter. It's all about the manager. The players are so much on the same page with the manager. Right.
Yeah, but can you imagine having that conversation with Pep if you sat here now? You know what honest Pep is and say, do you want Kylian Mbappe or do you want to have a really good team performance that you know you're going to work back when you haven't got the ball? You go, come on, give me Kylian any day of the week.
I'm not suggesting for a minute that Pep wouldn't want Kylian Mbappe. I'm saying that Pep would likely speak to Mbappe. Mbappe's an intelligent guy and say, this is how we do things here. This is how we did things at Barcelona. Do you think this is a good fit for you?
And then when you ask that question, you see it in his eyes, his response. And you'd get a feeling very quickly.
Well, precisely. But that's why he'd say,
Pep would know if he's saying, I'll do all the defensive work.
But no, of course. But I'm saying that's one of the interesting things to me. And that's why I think also Real Madrid are probably far more in the driving seat.
The dynamic with them, though, is where does he play? Because he's always stated he never wants to play through the middle.
Yeah.
So unless you're going to shove Vinny Jr. as a false nine, or shove him on the right-hand side and Rodrigo plays there because he wants to play on the left, Kylian. But as I said before, the Benzema departure of Real Madrid has changed absolutely everything. I don't even think this conversation happens.
I don't think it does because a year left, they knew that he was going. So they were always preparing for this moment.
But if Benzema turned around last month and said, I'm staying at Real Madrid one more year, this conversation between Real Madrid and Real Madrid and Kylian Mbappe doesn't happen.
Well, it's an interesting one. I mean, Real Madrid, obviously, they both occupy the same space and have done so far.
But in terms of the money as well, Benzema stays, Bellingham signed, you've got all the Camavingas and the Tchouamenis and the Valverdes. They could say to Kylian Mbappe, do you know what? We've been burnt before. We'll leave you and we'll take you on a free next year.
It's possible if they trust that's what they did before and they got screwed over.
Benzema's right? changed everything, so now they need him.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules. All right, enough Mbappe. Let's talk Nations League because Spain and Italy kicking off in one semifinal in a couple hours as we record this on a Thursday morning. Last night, Holland against Croatia. And Don, you know this because we were in touch before and you were like, oh, the Nations League. Yeah, exactly.
I'm footballed
right?
out. Can't be bothered.
Instead, we saw a tremendous game. Croatia winning 4-2 in extra time. Probably could have been 5-2 with a goal disallowed at the end. Holland with a last-ditch equalizer to take it into extra time. And the atmosphere, the fans, 15,000 Croatia fans there, most of them decked out with a little water polo caps and their Czech shirts. Holland, brilliant orange. And I felt for the home fans because, you know, the Dutch like the summer party, but they were really, really poor.
Yeah.
Croatia. Luka Modric.
Ran the show.
Nobody's told him how old he is. Nobody's told him you're supposed to be on your way to Saudi.
Has he left Real Madrid yet or not?
June 30th his contract expires. So,
what a player. I mean, my perception when I watch Croatia, doesn't matter what tournament they're in, Nations League, Euros, World Cup, as soon as you get to play them in extra time, it feels like you might as well just give up because they're unbelievably fit. Brozovic doesn't give the ball away. Kovacic doesn't give the ball away. Modric seems to get better as his age at 37, playing in these competitions in extra time, seems to get better, fitter, stronger, and is undoubtedly class. And you watch them, you think, they are some team. And that was some game, by the way. I didn't moan before the game going, oh, I'm footballed out, Gab, can't be bothered. And then I watched the game. And it was phenomenal.
Croatia kind of understated in the first half. Holland took the lead. I thought deservedly so. But then after the break in the second half, it was all Croatia. They went 2-1 up. And then you had that weird equalizer in the 96th minute. But tell me, how hard was it for? Because it was a side foot from Nolan.
Some skill.
But that was some serious skill because it's so easy to overhit that or underhit that.
Yeah, the best example was 5 minutes earlier when Gakpo had the chance and he panicked, Gakpo, and he went for a sort of really rushed, quick finish and he slashed at it and he pulled it wide left. That one was more of a cultured finish. In the last dying seconds of the game, where all those bodies in front of you, your Rolodex of finishes are, right, go for power, let me hit the target. It was a beautiful finish, just a little side foot instep finish just under the crossbar. And then you think two extra time. There's going to be some game here.
Now, at the end of the game, Jules isn't here, so we're not going to go and crucify poor
the Dutch
Ronald,
guy.
Dutch guy, there you go. However, you've got six substitutions, right? Because the game's gone to extra time. How he managed to make he ended up with such a weird situation with the substitutions that Holland finished the game with a back three made of Terrell Malacia, who I know some fullbacks can play center back. Not him, not ever. That penalty he gave away, he was all over the place. And then the other two were Frankie De Jong. I think Martin Deroon, both of whom are midfielders, not defenders. And who's playing at center forward?
Oh, Van Dijk.
Virgil Van Dijk.
And Weghorst.
Weghorst at least theoretically plays center forward for a living.
Yeah. He went all 1980s on us, didn't he? The Dutch guy. Two big fellas up front,
but he
launch thing, it.
But he,
couple
I
of footballers at the back.
He wasn't even launching it to the level. I thought if you're going to do that, then properly launch it. Instead, they tried to play through the Croatian midfield, I thought, a lot in the extra time, which, like, how do you expect Van Dijk to ever get the ball?
But that's where with Koeman, I think he tries so many different systems in one game. I think as a player, he would leave you massively confused. And he would say, well, you need a football IQ, which I totally get from manager.
And which he had as a player.
Absolutely. But I think once you start going through so many different systems in a game, in the end, you're going, I don't know what I'm doing. We're just going to hit Van Dijk. We're just going to hit Weghorst. We'll try and do something. We'll get a knockdown. We'll try and play from there. Territorially, we might be able to go to the pitch. That's where, with Croatia, they're the opposite. I feel as though they never change their system. They never really change the ballers that they've got in midfield. They might go for, you know, a player that's fading in the last 10, 15 minutes, but they never go away from their principles.
So, just to close this out, on Van Dijk, up and down this season, I thought his performance was really, really poor. Not just by his standards, but by anyone's standards. And I think he'll be the first one to be
disappointed. I think he needs a rocket, mate.
He needs a what?
He needs a rocket. He needs to be told. He needs to be told either from Ronald Koeman.
You don't think he realized, because on the Pekovic goal, where it takes him like an hour to go and react and
but
close him down.
I think he needs to be
and
told.
And the first one is what?
I think he's so casual, because he is so good. He's so casual in his performance, and I think probably as a character as well. He's very casual and laid back. Sometimes I think those type of players need a rocket, and that either comes from Jurgen Klopp or your international manager to say, listen, you aren't a given in this team. That's where if Liverpool could buy another quality centre-half, you can start to put pressure on Van Dijk and say, you are not a given in this side. So therefore, that level of player performance then has to go up. They have to respond. I think he's in his comfort zone.
I'm a big Virgil van Dijk fan, not just the player, but the man himself. But this was not his standard at all. I know he's had his ups and downs. And for those who say, oh, but it's the Nations League, nobody cares. Well, that generally comes from people from countries that never win anything at international level, i.e. England. I can assure you he cared about this one, and I assure you those Dutch fans cared.
I agree, that Dutch
team cared. We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. All right, enough Nations League. How about some quick hits instead?
Let's do it.
Jude Bellingham's transfer from Borussia Dortmund to Real Madrid is complete. Signed, sealed, delivered, done.
Done.
It's about 110 million euros, plus a bonus that could take it to 125 million. He doesn't even turn 20 until the end of this month, which makes him the most expensive teenager in the world.
What a player. What a player. What a signing. I mean, when you look at what Man City have done this season, you think they're going to be favourites for the lot. All of a sudden, Bellingham and maybe one or two others going in at Real Madrid, everyone's taking notice, because that is some statement signing. That is a Real Madrid midfield with Tchouameni and Camavinga and Valverde. Top end of the pitch with Vinny Jr. That looks like a team to me that's going to be there for, I don't know, the next 10 years. It's some signing, because he's some player, he's some athlete. He's got a very good head on his shoulders. He's very calm. I think even when the worst happens at Real Madrid and the white handkerchief come out for some, I think he'll take it. I think he'll own it. And I think he's going to be an amazing player for
him. I think also, I don't like to talk about intangibles, I find it trite, but this guy's shown that he's a real leader. He's got quality and he has quantity.
Would you go as far as to say this is on a level, if not a little bit higher than when Beckham went there? I know Beckham comes with a lot of stuff off the pitch.
No, this is bigger than Beckham. I mean, commercially, obviously, Beckham's bigger. Yeah. No, I think this is, potentially, it's the biggest signing since, I don't know, as far back as Ronaldo, somebody, but you know, certainly since Kroos.
Yeah.
But I think he can surpass Kroos.
Yeah.
In terms of the contribution to the club.
100%. Gab, Italy take on Spain in the other Nations League semi-final, which kicks off in a few hours. Gab, how excited are you to see Zaniolo back on the pitch?
Yeah, I mean, he played in the friendlies in November, but I miss the guy. I miss the guy. Same. The guy, you know, he had his injury, then he had his issues with Jose at Roma, and then he goes to Galatasaray, scored two great goals in Galatasaray's final game of the season. He's still only 23 years old. I want to see what he can do. I want to see him fit. And, you know, we've had so many talented young Italian players coming through.
Did he sign permanently there, or was he on loan?
I think they have a buyback, but as long as Jose is around, they're not going to exercise that. Nicolò Barella has been linked with a move to Newcastle with a reported offer of around 60 million euros. Don, your Toon allegiances are well chronicled, as well as your Serie A allegiances. What do you reckon?
What do I reckon? I don't see it happening, but I would love it if it did.
Huh? They've already said no. Not at that price.
Well, not at 50 million quid. I mean, I would happily pay some part of his wages to try and get him in at Newcastle, whatever that is, 10 or 20 quid. Because, again, like Bellingham, different sort of player, but a guy that I think is an incredible player to watch. Energy, covers every blade of grass, good in the tackle, very aggressive. Little bit impulsive at times, in terms of yellows, close to reds. But I like that in him. I like the character in him. If Newcastle got him, because I think that's the wonder, being a Newcastle fan. What's going to happen next? With all this money behind Newcastle, how do they play it? Do they go in for the sort of Galactico signings? Do they try and play it a little bit slow? But I tell you what, if they manage to get Barella, James Maddison and Bruno Guimaraes already there, I mean, you're talking some midfield three there. That
slightly
is.
Lopsided midfield, isn't it? A little
too. Don't worry about Maddison. That. They're not going to give the ball away.
All right. Okay, there you go.
But I tell you, if they got him, Gab, it would be some signing. So let's talk about Arsenal strikers, Gab. Recent rumours suggesting that Balogun won't be coming back, but they look to West London to bring in another forward.
That's right, Kai Havertz, the best on earth. 70 million, apparently the asking price from Chelsea, which I think, obviously they paid a little more for him with the bonuses and whatever, I think would make sense.
Does that fit?
I think what it says to me is I don't want just a traditional center forward. I want a guy who can do more things. It sounds like a lot of money. It's not where I would put my money if I were Mikel Arteta. This almost sounds like the kind of rumor that if you're Chelsea, you don't mind having out there just in case. But look, I mean, the time's going pretty hefty on this, there's interest there.
I mean, if Arsenal are announcing Declan Rice and maybe Moises Caicedo, then on the back of that, you go, oh, by the way, we signed Kai Havertz. You go, oh, that's some window. But to prioritise him first seems very bizarre to me.
Arsenal aren't announcing anything other than Reece Nelson right now because none of that's done. But I can ask you about this, and if it's another one of your former clubs, Don. We all expect Declan Rice to leave West Ham, despite the fact that they won the World Cup in 1966. But what do you make of the fact that the strong listings thus far with Arsenal and his £90 million a reasonable fee?
I think he is well worth the 90. And I'll use Enzo Fernandez at 115, for example.
Okay, and I'll use Bellingham to say why he's not.
Well, but I mean, transfer fees, I don't care. I'm not shelling out the money. I think if the job that he's done at West Ham, and I think lifting the conference trophy the other week against Fiorentina, I think proved he didn't have one of his most amazing games in truth.
No, neither did West Ham.
No, exactly. But the moments, they got it done. But I see him, like you see Bellingham going into Real Madrid for the next 10 years. He goes into Arsenal, he's got a 5-6 year deal. He's got no acclimatisation to do. He walks straight into their team. He makes them better. It allows maybe Arteta to move two or three pieces on by bringing Declan Rice in. So for 90 million, I would say you need to get that player signed.
Early reports are that West Ham are going to turn it down. They hope somebody else comes up and maybe offers them more money. I think this is going to rumble on. I think what Rice wants is also going to be a big part of the story. What is his choice in terms of preferred destination? But I think we'll agree, midfield is where Arsenal need to strengthen. Definitely. Xhaka gone, Jorginho
maybe
older.
Maybe Vieira not good enough.
Partey, we're not sure. Vieira, whatever. I'd loan him out. And I think he's got a lot of growing to do. I don't know how much higher I would go than 90 million, put it that way.
Oh, well. So Bayern are looking for a centre-forward, Gab. Eintracht Frankfurt's Randall Colomwani is the answer.
Is he the answer?
Is he?
Not at those numbers that they're chucking out. I mean, Eintracht happily quoting like 100 million, 120 million.
That's just a standard fee now, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, I mean, you know. 1900.
Easy there, dude. I know you could have scored the winning goal in the World Cup final, and I obviously had a good season. I'd also remind people that Tuchel won a Champions League with Kai Havertz as a center forward. So maybe he's not necessarily wed to the centre forward. I also remind people that what happened the last time Tuchel said, yeah, let's go and spend big money on a centre forward. And he got Romelu Lukaku. So obviously it's a different situation. Colomani's younger and so on. I think there's a price at which it makes sense.
Yeah.
But it's not the prices. I think they're going to have to work on this. And I'd also look at other options.
I've heard of Vlahović as a possible destination.
Comes with a ton of baggage, but also very young. And also, I mean, his technical ability together with his side is what makes people gets people excited, right? Manchester United have reportedly made an initial offer for Chelsea's Mason Mount of around £40 million, and it was rejected out of hand. Chelsea apparently want twice that, which sounds like a lot for a guy who's going to be left on his contract.
Well, again, it's 80, 90, or 100. Just a standard summer fee, isn't it? I mean, you sit here and you try and figure out who's worth what. Mason Mount's not an 80 to £100 million player.
Not with a year left on his contract.
No, exactly. But I think he improves Man United. But I'm still not sure what his best position is. I think he's an outstanding player. But I don't know where he excels. I think he's good for a squad. I think he's good for an 11. But to try and take Man United closer to Man City, I could think of better players to buy than Mason Mount if it's going to be 80 million quid. If it's near 40 or 50, I think in today's market, that's pretty reasonable and seems a number that they could do. But Man United haven't got loads of money to shell out 80s and 100 million pounds on players.
That's what they're telling us. And obviously this position maybe not as much of a priority given that for another year or two you've got Eriksen and Bruno. But again, if I'm Mason Mount, I might take my chances and stick around, see if I can convince Pochettino. Otherwise, walk in the summer.
Yeah, well, talking to Chelsea, the Inter Milan sporting director was in London to meet with them. What were they talking about, Gav?
Yeah, Piero Ausilio had a meeting in London, very well chronicled. They're talking about two things. They're talking about Romelu Lukaku, unsurprisingly. Lukaku would like to stay. He's open to coming back if Pochettino says, I really, really want you.
Chelsea fans have him back?
Well, they don't get to decide, right? I mean, the Chelsea fans have accepted having a former Spurs guy as their manager. You can accept Lukaku as well.
Yeah.
But I think it's difficult to make the numbers work because Chelsea do need to bring money in. Other one, Koulibaly, also has offers from Saudi Arabia. You know, Inter seeing is there a margin there. But again, Inter want the kind of deal where they take him on loan, Chelsea pays a big chunk of his wages.
I mean, that would fit, right, if they lost Milan Skriniar and you brought Koulibaly in?
Potentially, but equally, if you're Chelsea, you need to balance the books. Somebody's got to give you money back. Yeah. You spent $600 million in the summer.
Yeah.
Juventus have fixed their asking price for Weston McKennie after his unsuccessful loan spell at Leeds United. It's $35 million. Does that seem fair to you, Don?
Overpriced, in my opinion. I'm not a Weston McKennie fan. I don't know what he does. I think he runs around, he closes down, but he doesn't score goals, doesn't get assists. Not really a defensive player. Sometimes plays off the right. It's not his best position. Sometimes he plays central. I could think of better players to spend close to $40 million on. I don't know if you're a fan.
It's a lot of money. I think Juve, you know, we all know, like, Premier League, there's like a Premier League premium to transfer fees. And I think Juve are hoping that because he was in England, because people saw him, although maybe it's a good thing because he speaks English, you know, a $35 million is a price for a Premier League club. I think that drops to half if another club were to say, all right, we believe in this, we believe we can get you back. And into the player that, I think, to be fair, he was for a short spell at Juve.
Yeah.
Not the best time.
No. So the Manchester United sales saga rumbles on, Gab. What's happening? Some funny business going on?
It was this weird thing with the share price where on Monday after the, obviously, Manchester United quoted in the New York Stock Exchange, where after the markets closed, in after hours trading, the share price went from $19.80 or whatever it was to close to $24. So it's a 20% rise. And people couldn't figure out, wait, why? And The Athletic did some really good reporting on this. They traced it back to a tweet from some account in Wales, which is apparently an account for illegal streaming, which is like 300 followers. But that tweet was retweeted by this guy who's the editor of a Doha newspaper named Al Watan.
Right.
And supposedly this spread among investors and said, oh, look, if this guy in Doha is retweeting it, then it must be true. Both Sheikh Jassim's people went and, you know, they knocked this down. And then Rain
seems
did.
Seems amateurish,
well.
Doesn't it?
It seems weird. It almost seems as if, you know, somebody's manipulating the share price maybe for a quick sale. I don't know.
Might bang out a quick tweet and see how far it goes.
Yeah. Well, why don't you do that? No, seriously. No. This is what you do, right? Buy some United shares. Go on Twitter after the show, yeah. Right? And say, like,
Is this legal?
Yeah. I've heard rock solid like industry sources.
I want to distance myself away from what Gab's saying.
Just the deal is done. Jassim is buying, $5 billion plus $1 billion additional. Just go ahead and see what happens.
Well, if I get a billion, I might be in.
but no, it's the same stuff. Same as before, as you were. Sir Jim Ratcliffe, Sheikh Jassim. The possibility of them raising money, borrowing money from one of Ares, Oaktree, or Elliott, or them sitting on their backsides and doing nothing. Sorry, United fans. Don, you're a big Serie A watcher. Everyone agrees Manchester United could use a center forward, but the suggestion is that, from some, is that rather than pricey A-listers like Harry Kane or indeed Victor Osimhen, they could opt for Atalanta's Danish starlet Rasmus Højlund, who would cost no more than 50-odd million, given that he's only 20 years old. Is he ready?
Buy him. I love him. I think he's the closest thing you can try and clone to Erling Haaland. I've seen him enough times to watch the way he plays. When he's got his back to goal, he's very, very accomplished at getting hold of the ball and laying off. Normally, that's the things you've got to improve on as a centre forward. But he's incredible, like Haaland, at sometimes, which is a good thing, of ignoring the play and just getting your head down and sprinting in the box. Seems quite basic, but he's brilliant at it. When I've worked on Atalanta games, I've sent one or two clips to one or two Premier League managers that I know. And I just think for that sort of money, I think if Man United bought him for whatever it is, 40 to 50 million quid, I think very quickly you could turn him into a £100 million player. I think he's that good. I mean, Victor Osimhen and Harry Kane would guarantee you the goals. So if all three are standing right in front of you, you would probably go for Harry Kane because he'll guarantee you 30 goals a season, no problem.
But they all have different prices, of course.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I'm just thinking right. Money's no object. But I'm thinking if you're Man United, who have not, as it stands, one of the richest clubs in the world and not got loads of money to spend, I think the way Højlund plays, I think would be a brilliant signing for Man United. I think he's so, so good.
Could you make a case that United actually need two centre forwards, and maybe you get one of these guys like Osimhen or Kane, who are the finished article.
Don't think they've got the money, have they?
Well, I mean, you'd have to shift people or whatever. But given that, you know, Martial is like the new Darren Anderton in terms of being injured, and given that
Rashford, maybe they cash in on Jadon Sancho. Maybe they think he's.
If
not
you can get money
in.
For Sancho, I don't know. I'm just thinking about because Højlund is a really exciting talent. I think he's still a project. I don't know that he's going to have the.
He's not too rough, though. You know, normally when you buy a player, you have a rough diamond and you can polish him.
But I'm also wondering whether actual centre forward is his best position, or whether it's an.
I've only seen him play there.
Or you know,
I think the trouble is, I don't know if you might agree with this, is when you play for Gasperini at Atalanta, I think it's then hard. I think we've seen it a number of times when once you play in his system, which is so chaotic but in a brilliant way, some players then actually struggle to move on and find a new sort of way of playing because Gasperini's so sort of off the cuff. Do you agree or not?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's something that's been said. I was thinking of, you know, former Atalanta players who've moved on, and it has generally been
well,
a little
Fraula
bit of a
I think had the same sort of thing, didn't he, at Forest?
Remo Freuler, definitely. Robin Gosens at Inter, definitely. The guy, Castagne, at Leicester. So, you know, there are examples of this. The thing about Højlund is, obviously, they got him from, I think it was at Graz in Austria. So he's somebody who's been... You know, people have been talking about him since he was 15, 16 years old, and not just because his name sounds vaguely like Haaland.
So Monchi continues to be strongly linked with a move to Aston Villa, Gab. He's considered to be one of the greatest directors of football in the world. True? False?
Oh, he's definitely, that's definitely his rep. I think his rep was probably a little bit better maybe like 5 years ago when obviously he built those great Sevilla teams and, you know, wheeled and dealed and, you know, got Sevilla competitive all the time just while also turning a profit. If you were to talk to people at Roma, and I would advise, I'm not advising against Monchi. I met Monchi, but it's been an honor. He's obviously a big, big brain. I would advise the people at Aston Villa, not Christian Perslow, because he's no longer there, but maybe Nassif Sawiris and the other guy, to maybe pick up the phone and speak to your fellow billionaire, Jim Pallotta, about what went wrong at Roma in the years that he was there, and why it went wrong, and then decide whether you still want him.
And, I've got to say, in a future life, I'm coming back as a sporting director. I mean, it's the easiest job in the world, isn't it? Scout players, look at the data, look at the analysis, sign them. If they're no good, nothing to do with me. If they come off, genius.
All to do with you, though, because then you're out of a job if the owners don't like you. Which is, I mean, I'm just saying there's a lot of acrimony, I think, at the end. You know, some of the signings that he made didn't work out. Is it right? Is it wrong? I just want to get the full picture of it because you could argue the last couple of years at Seville, not necessarily. I mean, obviously, they just won the Europa League. I get that. But, you know, they also had three managers this season. So I think there's a lot to look at. I certainly said 5 years ago, you would have said this guy is the number one in the world. Tremendous negotiator, tremendous eye for talent. He's got a tremendous group of scouts who and really knowledgeable people work for him.
Yeah.
And unlike other sporting directors who, you know, you build your rep as a recruitment guy working for somebody else, and then you might move on to a smaller team because you want to kind of have your own shop. A lot of these guys have stayed loyal to Monchi over the years, which is also important. But I just look into it and see, like, what went wrong?
Yeah.
Can we put the blame, and do we want to do this? Just go in with your eyes wide open and not just because, you know, Unai Emery tells you to.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Yet another of your previous clubs, Don.
Another
tough times at Everton. There's the Premier League investigation to financial sustainability rules violations, the possibility of a lawsuit from other clubs who've been affected by if Everton are found guilty. Carlo Ancelotti suing the club over unpaid bonuses. And now the chief executive, Denise Barrett-Baxendale, has resigned after receiving threats. From what I read, she hadn't even been to a game since January, precisely because she didn't feel safe at Goodison.
That's sad. That's very sad. And Graham Sharp, I think, has left his role as well.
Yeah.
Everton. I think then,
and he's a club legend as well.
Yeah, right? which was another sad state. I mean, club legend. I think it's just an all-time low, I think, for Everton. I nearly got relegated there in 98 when we stayed up on goal difference on the last day of the season. It nearly happened last year when we were 2-0 down against Crystal Palace when Frank Lampard saved them. They won 3-2 and you think, right, that's it. It can't be in this scenario again. Then you fast forward 12 months and Sean Dyche has got to save them on the last day of the season. It's just an incredibly sad situation that the whole club, the fans, find themselves in. And going into a new stadium, not this summer, but the summer after, I think Everton need a real season of stability. Don't worry about trying to get into top eight. It's not going to happen. Don't worry about going down bottom four, bottom five. 12th, 13th, no drama. Just stay there.
Do you understand why they're so... I mean, are they angry at Moshiri? Are they angry at Bill Kenwright?
I think they're just angry at everyone. I mean, I tried to stick up for Bill Kenwright because I played under Bill Kenwright, but the fans know a lot more about their football club because they're seeing it and they're reading it and they're hearing it every single day. And they're not happy with Moshiri. So on the face of it, when I look at it, living down in London, and I look at $500 million that he's put in, I think, well, he's actually done a good job. It's the people underneath him, the sporting directors, the managers that have let him down. So that's how my eye sees it. I understand the scenario with... As I said, different directors taking a lot of money out of the football club and not necessarily putting a lot of money into the club from their point of view. So I get it how the Everton fans are desperate for their club to have no drama. So that's where there's lots of anger, lots of frustration. And that's where you start to see some changes that are happening. They need to happen, by the way. I don't think Everton could roll in with the same guys and girls at the top end of the pitch, at top end of the club, just going into a brand new season. We'll say, let's just hope something changes. Something has to change because when I watch Everton, they feel like they're a cat with nine lives. And every time they stay up, it's like one of their lives are going. And it's going to be inevitable. If something doesn't change, they're going to get relegated.
I think the really sad thing as an outsider, and look, I've read up on all this. I have my own views on Kenwright and these people and even... Usmanov, of course, isn't involved.
I try to stick up with Bill Kenwright, and I know the Everton fans know a lot more about their club than I do, being a former player. But my only angle on it is I've seen how Bill Kenwright speaks to players, and more importantly, how much he loves the club without having loads of money himself. That's my only little personal angle on it.
No question.
Job title and his role, I get
you. And they're two different things. You can be a good person and maybe not be good at your job anymore, if or whatever. And that's, people have different views on it. But I just want to reemphasize for people who say, like, well, why are you talking? You know, a whole bunch of different people, like, email the show and listen to the show. And a lot of people are like, well, why are you talking about Everton? Nobody cares. And you look at the history of Everton.
Of course.
You look at the, I know they're down now, but you look at the size of the fan base. You look at where they were.
The
this
Holy
is
Trinity.
Not just a really great historic
it's
English
history.
Club.
It's history. It's a historic football club with the Holy Trinity: Harvey Kendall, Howard Kendall, Colin Harvey, Alan Ball. You know, they've got the history.
And it has a huge fan base, and there's definitely I think potential there, and that's why it's so significant and so much history. I mean, people don't know Everton are an older club than Liverpool, right, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Just have no drama. Yeah. Just make sure you go into that new stadium with no drama. Jose Mourinho's on holiday.
Did you just say no drama?
Yeah. On to Jose Mourinho. What's he doing? Is he being busy on holiday? Is he chilling? Is he making noises? What's he up to?
All right, so obviously, when we last saw the character known as Jose Mourinho, he told everybody that it was obviously after the end. Well, he was suspended for the last game of the season. He came out and he's complained about how Roma are still, unripe as a big club.
Right.
Because they still need to grow to match his mentality, right, a big club mentality. And he kind of has to do too many things out there. He's also complained in the past about they're not spending enough money. And he was unhappy that his contract wasn't extended. He's got a year left on his deal. But and then he said, I'm going on vacation. For me, vacation is sacred. But one thing that he did was here in London at the Chelsea Harbour Hotel just down the road. He met with a representative from Al Ahly, who supposedly were offering him a mega deal, that told him that he's not joining them. He's going to stay at Roma and honor his contract. Glad he took the time to do that. They signed Evan Ndika from Eintracht Frankfurt.
Good
I don't know if
player.
You've seen much
yeah,
of
yeah,
him.
Yeah, good centre half.
Strong, physical.
Liverpool linked, yeah.
Centre half. The issue with Roma is they need to generate 30 million in capital gains before June 30th, before they can think of even spending a penny this summer. Strong suggestion Spinazzola may be sacrificed to do that. How Mourinho's going to take that.
Tammy's got an ACL.
And they need a centre forward, which is why they've been linked with Scamacca. So, but anyway, he's on holiday.
Still thinking of the money.
It's such a... We've spoken about this endlessly. Personally, I'm glad he's going to come back. If he does come back, he says he's going to come back, because any league is richer for having Mourinho around.
Definitely.
I think that's obvious.
I thought it would have been a very easy get out from Jose if he had went to PSG. He'd earned a lot of money.
PSG to offer you the job.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I know he was
pushing it, but I don't know. It wouldn't have been a good fit for me. I'm glad he's staying at Roma.
Don, I love it when players are honest and outspoken, but was Toni Kroos, did he go a little bit over the top when he said Eden Hazard, quote, let his career die
just
at Real Madrid?
Bit. Just a little bit. Why would you stick that knife in?
I don't know what Toni Kroos could be really outspoken in, like, that kind of wide-eyed German way. I don't know if he was lost in translation, but
I think he's just gone.
That's a bit cruel.
Seems cruel, isn't it? I mean, why would you not just, he's been unlucky, just trot out the moment line, he's been unlucky. You know, you should have seen him in training, he tried hard to get back. No. He allowed his career to die. Quite brutal, isn't it?
That's harsh. I feel for Eden. I want to see Eden back.
So, Gab, who's this new guy, and why did Barcelona sign him?
No, what's his name? Say it.
Mikaeli Faye.
Hey, that's not bad, okay. I think. So he's apparently this phenom.
Where is he?
He's a center back. He's from Senegal, but he was playing, and these are the wonderful vagaries of the transfer market. Everybody's known who he is since he was 15. But somehow, and I would suspect there might be an agent or two involved, he played last year for Kustosica, I hope I'm pronouncing it correct, which is a team in the Croatian second division. Only made his debut in March.
Have you seen him?
I just YouTube. He seems like an 18-year-old guy who's a very good athlete.
Yeah.
Playing against players who aren't very good, because that's the level. With Barcelona, obviously, they still need to, you know, dot some I's and cross some T's before they can actually make this official, but he has committed to them. I think this is a depth signing at the back, if it works out. Mm-hmm. I think people need to realize that a lot of things with players, as you know, especially players from countries outside Europe or outside, you know, the big five or big 10 leagues in Europe, often aren't straightforward, and they often take different routes to getting to the top. But, you know, Barcelona know their, they know their players. And if they scouted this guy young, you know, there's definitely something there. Riyad Mahrez is the latest big name to be linked with a move to Saudi Arabia, with Al Ahly showing an interest. He's 32, has a deal through 2025. If you were Chichi, Begiristein, and Pep, you just say, eh, we're not going to give him a new deal because he's really going to be 34 at the end of this one. If we get a fee, let's let him go. We got Bernardo Silva, we got Phil Foden.
How long does Bernardo Silva stay around? He's always made noises that he might...
Phil Foden.
You might not have Gundogan.
Cole Palmer.
Okay, are they good enough to take Man City to a treble
Rico
again?
Lewis.
I would keep him on. I think he's...
Or you're going to tell him, sorry, Riyad, we're not going to give you a new contract, and I know you have a chance to go to Saudi Arabia and make a ton of money.
When's his contract up?
2025.
Keep him for another year, then. Keep him another year. You're in no rush to sell. Unless you really feel as though...
But then he comes out and he says, look, I was on the bench, I didn't play in the Champions League final, play in the FA Cup final.
Then what do you want to do? Because Pep's the master at saying to Leroy Sané, what do you want to do? Do you want to move on? Go on, move on. Raheem Sterling, I think
what's really interesting here is, with all the Saudi talk, I think they have yet to pay an actual transfer fee, right? It's all been free agents. If he wants to go, and that's the first discriminant, he goes to Pep and he says, hey, what are your plans for me next season? I don't think Pep would view him as somebody who's irreplaceable, right? Because Sterling, Gabriel, none of these guys are irreplaceable. If you can get a fee for him and he's got in good money and he wants to go, I think by all means, I think you let him go and then, you know, deal with Bernardo Silva and Gundogan. If you have to go and spend money, it shouldn't be difficult for Manchester City to attract players, right?
I think the luxury...
And given his age profile...
I think the luxury that Man City are in at the minute, and I can't think of it happening at any other club around Europe at this present time, where Man City seem to be the club at the moment that are not going to get cherry-picked for their biggest stars. So all the players that leave Man City, whoever they are, is because Guardiola doesn't want them anymore. As I said, Leroy Sané, Raheem Sterling, Jesus, Zinchenko. You can all move because I'll buy better players.
I don't know if he feels quite that way about Gundogan or Bernardo Silva.
Gundogan, you wouldn't, because he turns into Zidane at this time of the year, doesn't he? Yeah. Because his football brain is high-level IQ. He's some player. So that sort of player you wouldn't want to lose. But if Gundogan says, well, I've just won the treble, I want to move on, I want to try Barca, I want to try something different, then obviously...
Yeah, and then you've got to replace him.
You sort of find a way. The Premier League, Gab, are considering a proposal to institute a spending cap. How would this work?
So basically the idea is... There's some parallels with the one in La Liga, that you get a number and the benchmark is the lowest TV income.
So is the number the fee you play, or does that include wages as well?
No, the starting point is how much TV revenue, Premier League TV revenue, does the lowest ranking team in the Premier League get? And so it's going to be like $105 million. Multiply that by four. But you can debate the amount you multiply by. And then you say, okay, your total transfer spend, net transfer spend, agent fees, and wages for the upcoming year can be no more than this amount.
Right.
So if we're in force now, it would be just over $400 million.
Is that not just another financial fair play conundrum where there'll be a way around it?
What people don't seem to understand is clubs don't like losing money. And I cannot emphasize this enough. For all their talk about billions this, billions that. Football's not a great business.
No.
Get into oil exploration.
Yeah.
I mean, people lose money in operating costs. You know, you got to get into a world of EBITDA and capital appreciation and blah, blah, blah. This is different. This is why, like, when people go and make their list for the Forbes list, the enterprise value, like, it's all nonsense. I mean, it's not complete nonsense, but it's, you know, you can pay people to do a study on you, like your brand value studying. Fundamentally, owners of football clubs want to cut costs, right? They are management, and they want to contain costs while still winning. This is something that's been chucked out there. I think right now, if they do it based on this, it would be so high, because I think the highest wage bill in the Premier League last season was $370 million. So you're basically saying... if this is your wage bill, you know, you can only do a net spend of 30 million in the summer. Would it hurt you? I don't know. I don't know. Or do you need to cut your wage bill? There's ways around it, but mm-hmm. at some point they're going to have to curb costs. And I actually think, I said this before about your team, Newcastle, and mm-hmm. the Saudis, I don't think they're viewing this as like free money. I think they're trying to run it as a club, and I think they want to try to get a return on this, and part of that is containing costs. The Premier League released their opening day fixtures.
Get in there.
I care zero about this. Why? It's my least, because it's so stupid. It's not. So hyped. It's 6 weeks away.
You're in the minority, Gab.
I've been relying for that every team will play every other team twice next season.
You're in the minority, man. Come on, let's have some excitement. It's opening day fixtures. Who's playing who?
Producer Freddie says some people find this interesting, so you must be excited to know that Manchester City opened their campaign against Burnley away on August 11th because Vincent Kompany playing his old club.
Why are you so doom and gloom on the fixtures? Liverpool play Chelsea opening day.
Who cares? Come if on, they don't pay opening
Liverpool
day,
fans care. Chelsea fans care. Come on, you pay your money. You work hard all season. You have a summer off and you go, right, who's my team playing? Match day one. Who is it? Why have you not got that love for it?
Because I really don't care. I care about the NFL fixture list because they don't play.
Well, there you go then.
Well, that's different because they don't play every other team home and away. And I think that actually matters.
Who's your team in Europe? You got a team in Europe?
My team in Europe.
Yeah. Are you Italian or England? Who's your team?
I don't really support a particular team. I'm more a fan of individuals. But no, I just genuinely do not care about this.
I think you are massively.
I'm glad you're excited. So Liverpool play Chelsea at Anfield, is it?
No, it's away because Liverpool are rebuilding one of the stands to the left-hand side. So they have requested that their first few games away from home.
So Chelsea are hosting Liverpool at Stamford Bridge?
I believe so, yes.
Is not on August 11th. You believe so, but we're not sure. Even though it's
because I was on the tubes...
What?
I was on the tube coming in and I'm reading all your hatred towards match day one fixtures. And I'm
Sunday, August 13th, Chelsea v
your
Liverpool.
You've been told.
What's
that?
No, I'm a professional. Prepared for the show.
Oh, Juan Cuadrado, one of my favourite Juve players.
What did you call him?
Juan Cuadrado.
Oh, okay. I understood something else. Go ahead.
One of my favourite Juve players. He's going to be leaving. No.
He's 35 years old.
He wears it well.
Wages.
He wears 35 well.
Like, I think he's been a really, really good servant to the club.
Definitely.
Over the years. In some ways underrated. I don't think he had a great season this past year.
Well, who did
most Juve players
well,
didn't.
Yeah.
They need to move on. They need to cut wages. And I think, you know, keeping a guy at 35, not the right thing. You're also keeping Bonucci around for another year, and then he's going to have his retirement next summer.
Strange club at the minute, Juve, ain't they? Obviously off the field, and that's a whole new story. But you keep reading reports where normally inside a dressing room, if a manager has a go of a player, it's inside a dressing room. Allegri's criticised his players to the press. Bonucci and I think Chiesa have criticised the manager to the press. All seems very unhealthy to me.
I think it's also very honest, given what they went through this season. And I also think from Allegri's perspective, coming out and saying things like, well, if it wasn't for the points penalty, we would have been third and we reached the semifinals of the Copa. I'm just like, just shut up. Just shut up. Like you're not, I don't know who you're trying to mock, who you're trying to impress. It sounds like you're taking the mickey out of Juve fans after what they've been through. Just be quiet, head down. The only reason you're still in a job is because you're too expensive to fire.
Yeah.
And
that's a sad state of affairs, isn't it?
Well, find your mojo because you know, there's a good manager in there. When you were forced to play the kids, eventually the kids showed you that
Definitely. They're
actually good.
Yeah.
And go down that route and say, this is a transition next year. We're going to build something and get out of your hole that way. And I think that's how you have to approach it if you're Max Allegri. Real Madrid have confirmed that Jude Bellingham, going back to him, is going to wear the number 5 shirt, which of course was worn by Zidane and, more importantly, I believe, by Manolo Sanchez as well in the 1980s, by Fernando Hierro.
Yeah.
After that,
see, I'm
you
like,
care about
I'm,
shirt numbers?
No.
You must, because you've got a big number 4 tattooed on your bicep.
That is true. That is true. Very true. If you've not had, you shouldn't have saw that, Gab. But I was like you on your match day one fixtures. I'm pretty down on the shirt numbers.
You don't care.
Don't
about
really
this.
Do it for me.
Yeah, I like it. I can do without traditional shirt numbers. I actually like the fact that, you know, people have wacky shirt numbers now.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I don't. It's marketing. That's all it is.
So FIFA have announced that Vinny Jr. is going to be part of a special anti-racism committee.
Yeah. Gianni Infantino will be in touch with him and his people. Obviously, Vinicius suffered
awful
racist abuse. FIFA had an anti-racism committee, which then they got rid of. And again, this is the problem with FIFA's messaging, right? FIFA had an anti-racism committee, and then it was dismantled. And everybody said, ha ha, bad FIFA. Oh, look, you think you fixed racism now, so you get rid of it. Or they say, oh, you don't care about racism because you got rid of the anti-racism committee. FIFA's reasons for saying this is like, we don't think, and I think it's a valid reason, we don't think anti-racism, and we don't think it requires a committee. We think every department within football should be a priority for everybody. So we're not going to relegate it to committee. We're going to put it centrally throughout football. The bottom line, though, is it's not, FIFA can have 50 committees if they want on this. They're not the ones who are going to be tasked with dealing with the situation when Vinicius gets racially abused, unless it happens at the World Cup or at the FIFA Club World Cup, right? So they don't have the jurisdiction over it. So it's great that they're talking about it. It's important that we continue talking about it. I think when you play for Real Madrid, they'll talk about it more anyway. I'm concerned for Vinicius, but I'm more concerned also about the guy nobody's ever heard of playing in the second division who gets racially abused and who's going to stick up for him, right? But this is something that La Liga needs to deal with first and foremost, because this is where Vinicius plays right now. It's something that needs to be done at league level. You can't have the passing of the buck to law enforcement. Law enforcement, they have different things to do. Sure, if you break a law, and in some cases it is illegal to do this, then by all means get them involved. But first and foremost, I want to see action from the clubs. I've said this before, even against their own fans. Make examples of people, and from La Liga, have the right punishments. And enough of this shouting, shut it all down, walk out, you know, like, come up with real things that can really improve things. And to do that, you have to know the situation, you have to understand the situation, and you have to ask yourself what works and what does not work. But it's not something that's going to be fixed at FIFA level, because they look after 211 nations. Like, they're not responsible for this, nor should they be, nor would I want FIFA to be responsible for this. Pep Guardiola has decided to give the £750,000 bonus he earned for leading Manchester City to the Premier League title to club staff, including receptionists, security guards, you know, the little people. All right, presumably not Erling Haaland. Nice gesture, right?
What a gesture. Isn't it amazing? You know, he goes in there, he's a multimillionaire anyway, they've just won the treble, he's had an outstanding season, why not give back to the players, the people that really matter inside of a football club? And what a day for them in terms of watching their team, players, manager and the staff around them watch them win a treble and all that hard work, and all of a sudden in your salary, boom, pay rise.
Yeah, I mean,
it's amazing. Great gesture.
It's a bonus too, and then he got other bonuses. And you know, I think people are going to say, "Oh well, it's 6 or 7% of his annual salary, and he can probably write it off."
Yeah, taxes. They're just the haters. Forget about them.
But you know what? Maybe it is. But he did it.
Absolutely.
And others didn't.
Exactly.
And you know, while Manchester City have an enormous number of people on their books, it's a hugely, hugely staffed club.
Forget the haters; just give them a lot of love for doing it.
Yeah, this is also going to make a difference to some of these people, because I don't know how much a security guard in Manchester City is going to make. So well done him.
Absolutely. So Gab, there'll be no blackout of the Women's World Cup in Germany, England, Spain, Italy, and France after the broadcasters reached a deal with FIFA. You had strong views on this before.
Yeah, and I still do. I'm really glad that there was such a level of hypocrisy in this, right? And I'm really glad that FIFA held out. I'm not in a position to judge whether, you know, what the actual market value was. But for those who missed out on this, people talk about equality, equal play at the World Cup for men and women and blah, blah, blah. FIFA, you have to give more money. But then when they went and they tried to sell the rights, which is how FIFA makes all the money for the Women's World Cup, they got paltry offers back from broadcasters. And broadcasters are saying, well, but we're public service broadcasters. We're not commercial enterprises. And look, and then the World Cup is taking place in Australia, so the time zones aren't favorable and blah, blah, blah. My point is, precisely because you're public service broadcasters, if you believe, and if it's a priority for your country, that the women's game should get exposure and should be on television,
yeah,
then you need to go and ante up. And equally for the people campaigning for equal prize money, where do you think that money comes from?
Mm.
It comes from broadcasting.
Yeah.
And I would have gone further. I would have liked to see the governments getting involved as well, because I know that there's a separation and these are often license supported and whatever. Equally, if it's a priority for a country that there should be, you know, equal opportunities, because this is about opportunity, then they could have kicked in some money. Anyway, it's done. I'm glad these games are going to be in television in Europe. It would have seemed grotesque if they hadn't been. Done. That brings us to an end.
Amazing.
Thank you so much.
Loved
for filling, I was going to say Jules's big boots, but he probably has little tiny,
hairy chest.
Tiny feet.
I seen his chest the other day. That wasn't a good sign.
Really, hairier than yours?
Very hairy.
All right, there you go. Maybe we'll see them both with their shirt off next time. Anyway, we're going to be back on Monday. We'll have the Nations League final, and I'm sure some transfer updates as well. Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.